County cricket, international cricket, test cricket, franchise cricket, red ball, white ball, 100-ball cricket. At The Cricketer, we care about the cricket you love. And that's why we've launched a brand new app built for fans of the English game. Download The Cricketer app and sign up to our Access All Areas Pass to receive agenda-setting journalism and illuminating storytelling straight to your phone. The latest news from the England camps, a dedicated daily service for fans of the 18 first-class counties, and committed coverage of women's cricket. Download the app today and enjoy 1 month for free unlimited access. The Cricketer. We care about the cricket you love.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast in association with our friends at Bear Cricket. I'm your host, Aaron, aka The Cricket Connoisseur, and on my left for tonight's special episode of TCCP is none other than former Lancashire seam sensation, Kyle Hogg. So Kyle, first things first, mate, thank you very much for joining me here on the podcast tonight. It's an absolute pleasure to get you on for a chat about all things county cricket. I have to ask, mate, how's your day been so far?
So far, it's been good, yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, I'm getting on with things. You know, we were supposed to do that this morning, and then laptop issues, internet issues. So it's good to finally, you know, have a good chat about cricket.
It most definitely is, Carl. You know the old proverb, good things come to those who wait. I think that's how tonight's podcast is going to go. And actually, before we get into our conversation, I just have to give a bit of a shout out, actually, to England's under-19s. Absolutely phenomenal today. Jacob Bethel, the Warwickshire rounder, 88 from just 42 balls. Sensational. And a fantastic way to reach the semi-finals of the 2022 Under-19 Cricket World Cup. So congratulations to the lads. Wishing them all the very best in that tournament. And honestly, just so, so impressed. Couldn't believe it. And in fact, Carl, you'll probably know this better than I do, but three names in particular from your county of Lancs: George Bell, Tom Aspinwall and Josh Boyden. How impressive are those three as prospects heading into the near future?
Yeah, I think, obviously, I've not had a lot to do with them. I'm just sort of the same as everyone else. You know, you just see the names in and around Lancashire, you're hearing, you know, really good things about them. You know, I think for them to get the chance to play in an under-19s World Cup, you know, it's, you are on TV, you know, you're getting the chance to play against the best players in the world. And not only just been playing, they've been the standout performers, which is, you know, really exciting to see. And you know, they must be really happy with, you know, how things are going.
Absolutely. I think we all are at the moment, to be honest. They've been absolutely brilliant. So, yeah, just had to give them a quick shout out. But honestly, they've been absolutely superb. Cannot wait to see what the rest of the tournament holds for the young Lions. And as I said beforehand, just wishing them all the very best of luck heading into the rest of this year's Under-19 World Cup. But Kyle, before we get into the main course of tonight's podcast, which will, of course, surround Lancashire County Cricket Club, the Red Rose, one of the biggest, most illustrious, most prestigious clubs in the county circuit, we have to start at the origin of your cricketing journey. So what were your first ever memories of cricket, either playing or watching this wonderful game?
Well, my dad played cricket, my granddad played cricket. So I think, you know, I was just lucky to be around, you know, cricket clubs and dressing rooms. And, you know, I was always sort of had all my free time was spent at cricket clubs, whether that was, you know, playing cricket or, you know, kicking a football, rugby ball on the outfield. It was just, you know, I think looking back now, I was just really lucky to always be around, you know, a cricket club, which, you know, for youngsters these days is becoming, you know, more and more scarce. You know, like I spent, me and my friends, we spent every second we had, you know, like being at a cricket club. And, you know, I look back with fond memories now. You know, it was just a really, really good time to, I suppose, be a young kid.
Absolutely. And you've alluded to your family there, your dad who played in the county circuit for Lancashire and Warwickshire, and then your granddad. Just for those who don't know, could you just tell us who your granddad is in this incredible game?
So, yeah, he's Sonny Ramadan. He played for the West Indies, came over in the early 1950s tour with England to play against England, ended up staying in England, you know, proing in the leagues, playing a bit of minor counties, playing for Lancashire. Yeah, and I think, you know, in them days, a lot of, you know, international cricketers, they earned more money from playing club cricket and playing, you know, county cricket than they would playing for, you know, their own countries. So, you know, I only hear what, you know, when my granddad's still alive, he's 92, and he, you know, he tells stories about, you know, you'd be playing a club match on a Saturday and there might be 2,000 or 3,000 watching and you're getting paid, you know, like £100 or something, where I think he said he used to get £30 for playing a test match for the West Indies. So, you know, it was, I think he was, you know, very lucky to, you know, come over to England and play cricket. And obviously, you know, he was pretty special talent.
He most certainly was. And if I'm not mistaken, didn't he bowl, I think it was 98 overs in an innings at Edgbaston in 1957 against England. 98 overs he bowled in a single innings. That's absolutely extraordinary.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you've never seen, but he's a tiny bloke, like 5'3". You know, he's nothing to him. So I think to bowl, you know, sometimes you don't even bowl 98 overs in a month. But to bowl it in an innings, you know, is, I think it might still be a record, might not. But, you know, it'll take some beating anyway, that is for sure.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to see that broken anytime soon, to be honest.
I reckon Jimmy could break it.
Oh, yeah, if anyone was going to, it would be Jimmy. It would be. Honestly, he doesn't seem like he's going to stop playing cricket, does he, at this rate?
No. And, like, you know, why should he? You know, you see, you shouldn't be judged on sort of your age. You know, you look in football, look at likes of Giggs, Scholes, Lampards, people like that. You know, if you're the best player in the world and you're still performing, then you deserve to get picked. And that's exactly where, you know, Jimmy is. You know, he's the best bowler we've got by a mile, other than obviously Broad. So, yeah, I think if he's fit and he feels up to it, you know, he's got to keep playing.
Yeah, I would also fall into that category. He's a master, isn't he? The king of swing, as we know him here in England and Wales. He honestly just defies what we think of the ageing process, doesn't he? He gets better with age. That isn't what happens to professional sports people. And yet, with Jimmy Anderson, he's proven everyone wrong.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, it's experience, isn't it? You know, he's not bowling probably 90 mile an hour like he did 10 years ago. But, you know, what he's sort of not bowling up in speeds, he's making for in his craft that he's learned over the last 10 or 15 years. And just proves that, you know, to be successful in Test cricket, it's not about bowling 90, 95 mile an hour. You know, it's there's a lot more to it than that. And, you know, he just keeps performing day in, day out. And, you know, that's a massive credit to him.
It most certainly is. And what a fine cricketer Jimmy Anderson is. The Burnley Bradman, or the Burnley Lara, whichever one you want to call him. Brilliant, brilliant player, great character. And yeah, long may it continue. You know, we don't want to see Jimmy retiring anytime soon. He's an absolute legend of cricket, not just here in England and Wales, but indeed on a global scale as well. And talking on that more global scale, I suppose, in terms of both an international and a domestic perspective, Kyle, who in the world of professional cricket, aside from your family members, did you try to look up to in those early years? Did you have any role models, any influences, idols, per se, in those early years that you tried to copy your game off of?
You know, I think I was lucky that growing up, I was a Lancashire fan. You know, like, I loved cricket. I loved watching Lancashire, you know, and then watching Mike Atherton, John Crawley, Flintoff, you know, can go Peter Martin, Ian Austin, can go on forever and ever. And then all of a sudden you get invited to go to training with them. You're in, you know, I'll never forget my first net at Lancs, and Mike Atherton came up to me and introduced himself. And I was thinking, you know, I've just been watching you bat for England in the win, you know, in a test match this winter. Like, I know who you are, sort of thing. So I think I was just blessed to be around sort of, you know, not necessarily big names, but, you know, highly successful cricketers. So I sort of probably looked up to all the Lancashire players, all the Lancashire bowlers. But, you know, I just loved cricket. I loved all sports. You know, I always watched, you know, cricket, that any cricket that'd be going on around the world. You know, I think that's where probably today's kids, you know, especially going into the coaching side, you know, they don't understand the history of the game. They don't understand who's who. It's all about the here and now. Whereas I think probably 20 years ago, we all knew a bit of everything about every team. So, yeah, I think I was just lucky to being in around that setup at Lancashire, and, you know, I looked up to all of them. You know, they're all international cricketers. It was really good.
I can imagine it was, because as I alluded to beforehand, you think of Lancs, they are one of the biggest clubs in this country. So much history, so much pedigree, so much tradition, and there's so much passion surrounding that Red Rose. It really is a special club to be a part of here in this country. And that brings me nicely, actually, onto your days from a playing perspective, I suppose, at the club itself. So, Kyle, what were your first memories of Lancs? What were your first kind of impressions of the club? You mentioned there all of those massive names. I imagine there would have been some feelings of almost being starstruck in those early years. But what were your first impressions of Lancashire as a county cricket club?
Well, I mean, you know, I'd done well in league cricket, done well in, you know, the junior stuff at Lancashire. You know, in them days, you didn't have academies, you didn't have anything. You sort of either played for the Lancashire under-18s or you played in the second team. So I was lucky to play, you know, that summer as a 17-year-old in the second team, did really well. And then at the end of the season, you know, I got picked in a first team game. I think it was the last game of the season, obviously nothing to play for, but it was Bob Simpson, who was the coach at the time. He was like a, you know, a hardened Australian, you know, a legend really. So he, you know, he picked me for a game at the end of the season, a day-night match. You know, I remember like getting coloured kits, you know, it was in a white ball, you know, it was just something that I'd never even, you know, like come across before other than seeing it on TV. Yeah, and then obviously going into Old Trafford and playing, you know, you see the crowd, and I don't know, I don't think I was nervous or anything, because I, as a youngster, you're not thinking about are you going to do well, are you not? You're not thinking of everything as probably things you do as you go on with your career. It was more just the excitement of going into Old Trafford and not being there to watch a game. You were there to go into the dressing room and walk out onto the field. And you know, it was just, it is an amazing stadium. And as people have seen now, it's just getting bigger and better. And, you know, it's arguably one of, you know, the best stadiums in the world, not just England. And it produces the best wicket, which produces the best cricket.
It's definitely up there, I would say that. And again, it's a shame that my Lancastrian co-host Joe Nutsy Nuttall isn't here tonight, because he would be well and truly in your corner tonight, Hoggy. Absolutely, yeah. He'd be massive grin on his face saying, oh, Lancashire, best this, that, the other. I would argue it is one of the best, though. Absolutely, I love Old Trafford. Atmosphere is pretty good as well. Not quite Edgbaston for me as a Warwickshire boy, but I'll tell you what, it's definitely up there. Fantastic venue. Cannot recommend a visit up north more than enough. Honestly, it's a fantastic place to go and watch a game of cricket. And in terms of that first 11 debut, what a perfect transition that is into my next question, because I wanted to know the thoughts and feelings on that day. You know, what's going through your head? You mentioned there a lack of nerves, but there was this sense of excitement. What can you remember from the day itself? What can you remember from your performances? Maybe, you know, your first ever wicket as well. What can you remember from your Lancs first team debut?
Yeah, I remember getting a wicket. Got Steve Stubbins out, who played a bit for quite... We played Derbyshire. It was more just like, I just remember like looking around the field, and Neil Fairbrother was at first slip, who's, you know, was an absolute legend. And it was one of those where everywhere you looked in the field, it was like them, those guys were used to those sort of games. You know, in probably 20 years ago, the day-night matches at Lancashire, they were packed. You know, the stadium was really busy. It wasn't just the Yorkshire game once a year. It was everyone used to come and watch the cricket. It was just, yeah, I think when you're young, you're just excited, aren't you? You don't get nervous. You're just raring to get out there. It's like, you know, your friends come and watch, and obviously your parents or whatever. It was more just like, is this really happening? You know, like you look at, like I mentioned, you know, the people on the pitch you're sharing it with, and then you're like running up to bowl and they're like trying to like, you know, keep you going, egging you on. It was surreal looking back.
I can imagine it was. And just to give the listeners a bit of a wider context surrounding your performance on that day, Kyle, figures of 1 for 14 from 6 overs. That's a pretty impressive debut, I have to say the least. You know, good economy rate. Mention it as well, Steve Stubbings, out LBW. That was your first ever wicket in county cricket. And just looking at some of the names on that team sheet, Freddie Flintoff, you mentioned Neil Fairbrother, John Crawley's your captain as well. that Lancashire team was absolutely stacked, wasn't it? Murray as well in that year. I know he wasn't in that game, but played for Lancs.
Yeah, and the best thing about it was, like, it wasn't, you didn't feel like a young lad in the team, because every single person in that team had at some stage been a youngster coming into it. So, like, they all understood, you know, how it worked, you know, likes of Fairbrother, Freddie, they just sort of put your arms around you and wanted you to be a part of it, and they wanted you to succeed. And that's, you know, very special playing in teams like that, because they're not always, you don't always play in teams like that where everyone wants each other to do really well.
100%. And it's so important, isn't it? Especially as a young player, to have the backing of a dressing room. It's a very healthy environment to, so suppose, have your county cricket education in those most formative of years. So that's excellent here. And again, that Lancs team, my goodness, so much talent, legends of the game in that dressing room. It must have been absolutely incredible to share a dressing room with some of those names. And you alluded to it beforehand there, Kyle, a certain match which takes place, or a couple of matches, I suppose, up in the north. And that is, of course, the Roses match. Every single year, Lancashire versus Yorkshire. First of all, Kyle, in your opinion, is it the biggest derby in the country?
Yeah. Comfortably.
Yeah, I thought you might say that. Again, the Surrey and Middlesex fans, they might disagree. I would fight the Bears versus Pears corner, but I've been told on Twitter that it's not quite there just yet, to be honest. And
I think a lot of it's to do with football, though, as well. You know, like, you know, the Lancashire-Yorkshire rivalry is United, City and Leeds and whoever else, isn't it? You know, I think that you do get the football vibe at those games compared to your general sort of cricket matches, you know. So it's, I think that's probably which gives it the added bit of needle, you know, the football fans wanting to get one over on the Yorkshire rivals.
Well, I've been told that by Joe, actually. I've never been to a Roses match. It's one of the things that I really want to experience, actually, in the next year or so. But I've been told the atmosphere for those, it's not exactly cricket-like at times. It can get a little bit rowdy, shall we say.
Yeah, especially at Headingley. You know what I mean? Headingley's is even the England players for us, you could probably ask Freddie, Jimmy, you know, the ones who play now, Livingston, Saqib. You know, if you're playing for Lancs at Yorkshire, doesn't matter how many tests or one days you've played, you know, you're getting it off the crowd. And and I think, you know, that's just, I suppose, the nature of how big the game is.
Oh, exactly. It means the world, doesn't it, to both sets across the Pennines, the red and the white rose. It's a huge game. Really is, and always gets a massive TV audience. Each of the grounds, both Headingley and Old Trafford, always sell out as well. It really is a prime showpiece of any county season. So, again, if you got the chance, go. That's all I'll say. I mean, they produce some great encounters as well over the past few years when you think about it.
Yeah, and like, obviously, if you play a county cricket in general, you play into one man and his dog, or, you know, like, you might, if it's a sunny day, you might get a couple of thousand there. So it's probably the only time as a county cricketer you get to experience probably international cricket, you know, playing in front of those big crowds and you know, the good atmospheres. So, you know, it's the one fixture that all the players look for as soon as they get released every, you know, at the beginning of every season.
I think that's exactly the same for the fans as well. You know, as soon as those fixtures are released, albeit a lot later this year in 2022, it's the first one. It's just laser focused in on the derby game. It is an absolutely massive, massive match for both sets of fans. And, well, I suppose we'll start with your first ever memories of a Roses match, you know, either playing or watching in them. What can you remember from those kind of games?
I remember, you know, playing in one at Old Trafford, and, you know, we had sort of, you know, the names that we've mentioned already. Yorkshire had Jason Gillespie, Gough was playing, Darren Lehman, you know, Craig White, you know, you could go through their team, and it was sort of like pretty close to two international sides. You know, a big crowd on the middle wicket at Old Trafford, which is obviously normally used for the internationals. So there's probably already been an international, and we were on that wicket. So it probably, you know, to me, it felt like, you know, that's as tough as cricket you're ever going to play unless you're playing for England. And as much as, you know, we get on with all the lads for Yorkshire, you know, the great lads, and people forget that you play against each other so much in the season, you do become friends. But, you know, it felt like, you know, it felt like international cricket, and, you know, when Jason Gillespie was in his prime, I suppose, for Australia at the time, and, you know, Darren Lehman was arguably one of the best county overseas batters there's ever been. You know, it was exciting. Yeah, it was just really good to be a part of.
Absolutely. Yeah, just special games and some of those names as well, the Yorkshire players. Have to ask about Dizzy, Jason Gillespie. Did he ever mention the double ton against Bangladesh?
No, I think, do you know what? I think it was probably before he did that, I reckon.
Even in the years since, though, even as Sussex coach, he never mentioned it.
Not to me, no. I mean, you know, it's... no. I don't think we'd listen to it too much, to be honest, anyway.
You're lucky, Carl. You might be one of the only people in county cricket who hasn't heard the tale. Dizzy, if you're listening, have to get in touch with Kyle. Tell him all about it. No, to be fair, it was a good knock, that. And obviously, Jason Gillespie, a fine, fine cricketer. And a good coach as well. He's turned into a very, very good coach.
And, like, you know, I wouldn't say I know him well, but just genuine top bloke. And you can see why he's gone from being one of the best bowlers for a number of years in the world to, you know, he looks like he's one of the best coaches now in world cricket. And I'll probably put that down to because he's just a genuine top bloke, and people, you know, when they play for him, they want to do well for him as much as they do for themselves. And, you know, that's a reflection of how he is.
100%. Yeah, again, I can't say I've had the pleasure of speaking to Jason Gillespie, but he does just, you know, he radiates those good vibes, doesn't he? Shall we say, seems like a top bloke, to say the least. And again, yeah, we just talk about all those incredible Yorkshire names. I have to ask, Kyle, over the years, what was your favourite moment from a Roses match in terms of maybe a standout performance, maybe something which happened on or off the field? What would you say was your real highlight from your playing days in a Roses match?
In the dressing room or on the pitch?
Can say either.
Okay. I remember quite a funny one. It's obviously everyone gets used to normal cricket stories. Remember when we played Yorkshire at Headingley and Brad Hodge got out, I think, about 20 minutes before the end of the day's play. Normally when you play at an away ground, they bring food in for you at the end of a day's play. And then so the Yorkshire assistant brought the food in for everyone, you know, like as they do as a goodwill gesture. Hodgie got out, came in and put his bat straight through all the pizzas and just splattered the walls with pizzas because he was out about 10 minutes before the end of the day's play. You know, and then the things you remember, you're playing loads of cricket, but you look back and, like, you know, that was pretty funny.
I wasn't expecting that, to be honest. Yeah, we don't usually have stories like that on the podcast. That is brilliant.
Yeah. I mean, that's what it's about, isn't it? It's nothing... you know, angry Australian, they love getting runs. And then, he knew the enormity of sort of playing in that Lancashire-Yorkshire match. And it's good, you know, it wasn't, you know, it was funny at the time, but it's good to see how much it, you know, it means to, I suppose, the overseas players when they come and play for you, you know, because some do come over just to, I suppose, collect the money and, you know, take it home. Whereas, I suppose, every team probably has that. But, you know, the ones when they do come over and they bat for you or the ball for you, like they're playing in a test match, that's, you know, that's what you really remember about the players. And it was great to see how much it meant to him, but, you know, it was good, funny.
That poor pizza, though, you know, on the wrong end of the Brad Hodge stick on that particular day. And you mentioned actually there with regards to overseas players, because over the years, we could spend ages listing the incredible amounts of talent which you played alongside at Lancs. Who do you say really stood out to you in terms of those overseas talents? We mentioned Brad Hodge. I'm guessing Murali will be up there as well.
Yeah, I mean, the obvious ones are like your Muralis, Ganguly, probably when he first came over, even though I didn't have much to do with him. But the two that really stand out for me, one was Simon Katic, who was obviously played probably more than a handful against Australia, but from, you know, looking from the outside in, he was probably, you just looked at him as a decent Aussie test cricketer. You probably didn't, you looked average 40, you probably wouldn't know much about him. But as soon as he came over and he was in and around, you know, the environment, he just, every day he went out to play cricket, it was the, you know, the be all end all for him. You know, whether that be Tuesday morning at Leicester or Northampton, it's freezing, there's no one watching. You know, when he went out to bat, you know, his life depended on it, and he expected the same for everyone else. And, you know, he really, really, you know, brought everyone along with him. Just a tough Aussie, you know, really tough, old school Australian. And VVS Laxman, you know, we had him for, I think, a year or maybe two, probably Laxman and Chanderpaul in the same sort of breath, you know, because, you know, they were well established. They probably both played over 100 tests, absolute legends of the game. But, you know, they were same as Katic, you know, Chanderpaul, and he'd be hitting balls at 9 in the morning, be hitting balls at 6 at night. You know, Laxman would be, when he's not batting, he'd be talking to all the youngsters or just talking to the batters about batting different situations. And, you know, they just really loved being there and passing on their knowledge. And you look back, at the time, you just took it for granted. But I think you look back now and it was just, you were very, very lucky to be able to, you know, bat with them two in the middle, or, you know, just share the dressing room and the stories.
Absolutely. I mean, obviously, as a cricket badger, I'm just listening to that and thinking, that's just remarkable. You know, you're sharing a dressing room.
There's been loads, like Kyle Hooper was another. You know, we had Hooper at the end of his, sort of the end of his career, and he'd never, like, you know, really, really quiet guy, really quiet. But if you started talking to him about the biggest sixes he's ever hit, then he'd just come out, like his eyes would light up and he'd tell you loads of stories. And then, you know, you were just, I think everyone sort of has their own different way of being an overseas professional. In them days, it was, you sort of had them for the whole season, so they play every single, you know, game of the year, whereas now, you know, the amount of cricket that's on and the requirements for international cricket, they sort of, they just come in and out, don't they? So I'd say the lads probably don't get to see as much as they should do of, you know, of the whoever's the overseas cricketer.
Yeah, it's not like how it used to be when you'd have an overseas player for the entire season. We are seeing that now and again. I mean, Matthew Wade's done that for Worcestershire ahead of the 2022 season. But nowadays, it is more a case of, what, a few months here and there, maybe in some cases a few weeks because of franchise and international commitments. It is a little bit of a shame, to be honest. I will say that, especially for the younger cricketers, because, again, just listening to that, VVS Laxman, Shivnarine Chanderpaul, Brad Hodge, who, again, excellent limited overs cricketer, to say the least, Freddie Flintoff, Jimmy Anderson, you know, John Crawley, mentioned him beforehand, Neil Fairbrother. The list goes on and on and on. It just must be incredible to share a dressing room with all of those incredibly big names. And I suppose nowadays, as a result of that increased international and franchise fixture congestion, it's not the case anymore, is it?
No, definitely not. You know, it's... they probably, even though the Lancashire players or be whoever it is, Worcester, Surrey, you know, your commitments, if you get to that sort of level, you know, you're probably committed to three or four teams around the world 12 months of the year. So it's, you know, especially when, I suppose, when Jimmy and Freddie used to come back and, you know, play for us, it was because either they'd maybe been injured or they needed just to have a bat or a ball before, you know, a test series was coming up. So, you know, you do get to play with them and share the knowledge, but you're not sort of having the county grind day in, day out, you know, like spending a lot of time with them, you know, picking the brains and stuff, because they're just, you know, they're not there as much as you'd hope. So.
Exactly. It's a massive boost though, isn't it? When they do come back into the fold, you can just tell, you know, there's an extra bit of zip around the dressing room. You know, when Jimmy comes back to play for Lancs, or you get Root coming back for Yorkshire, or Stokes back for Durham. I remember that this summer. You know, there was a lot of hype, a lot of buzz around the Riverside when he returned. It is just a shame though, isn't it? But again, that's how cricket is. That's how the game has evolved. It's something we have to live with. And yeah, it's just how things are nowadays. I suppose the county circuit, when you think about it, since the 1980s really has changed so much, hasn't it, in terms of that overseas dynamic? Nowadays, it is a case of odd little stints here and there, whereas in the 80s, county cricket was the place to be. You'd have the biggest names on the planet. I suppose now the epicentre of domestic cricket, or franchise cricket, I suppose, is now the IPL in that regard. But I'll tell you what, we still get some excellent county cricketers. We really do. I mean, this summer we're having Marnus Labuschagne. He's come in. Rizwan, Rashid Khan, to name a few. But yeah, it's not to the same extent as it was in the 80s and 90s, but...
Yeah, definitely. You know, like you said, there's so much cricket about, and the ones who are involved in the franchises, they don't need to come to, you know, England and play county cricket anymore. You know, it, as much as they probably loved it in, you know, 10, 20 years ago, it was, you know, there'd be a big financial incentive for them as well. You know, if, I suppose, if you're taking pounds, big, you know, a good amount of pounds back to you, you know, your rupees, your, you know, what, rand or dollars, whatever it is, you know, it does set them up a lot. But whereas now, you know, they're earning so much money around the world, it's, you don't need to come to England for 6 months and play county cricket unless, you know, they've got their heart set on it and they feel like it's going to have a big impact on them, you know, being maybe getting picked for the countries.
Well, that actually is a big thing nowadays, I suppose, because we've seen this with Marnus. He is a great example of this. For players who really do have their hearts set on county cricket, you do get some really good talent. And 2022, across formats, we are going to be blessed with so much overseas talent. I cannot recommend going down to your local county enough, sitting yourself down on one of those seats and just enjoying the cricket, because there's going to be so much extraordinary talent on show across the competitions this summer. Honestly, folks, just get yourself down to a county or two or even three. You know, the more the merrier this summer. But honestly, I think the 2022 season will be one to remember without a shadow of a doubt. And talking of seasons to remember, Kyle, I suppose that brings me beautifully onto a chat which I know a lot of Lancs fans will want me to talk about, and that is 2011, the county championship winning season. First and foremost, before that season started, were there any clues, any hints that that team would go on to lift the trophy?
Probably, like, in our own environment, we always thought, you know, we'd played together a lot since we were kids, a lot of us. I think it was a time where they were struggling for money, so they weren't necessarily going to be getting an overseas. You know, the years before it, we just really struggled to get results playing at Old Trafford, just because the nature of how good the pitch was. Even the games when we had Murrelly and Keady, you know, we didn't always win matches. You know, the wickets became flatter and flatter. So, you know, that year we knew that the development was to be going on, so which meant we were going to be playing a lot of games at Liverpool, Southport and Blackpool, I think we played at, which, end of the day, you know, the great, great grounds, great facilities, but they are club grounds. And if you get 4 days of good weather, you're going to win or lose. So, which played into our hands a lot. You know, people were writing us off because we didn't sort of have all the mega names anymore. You know, all them had sort of retired or, you know, or gone on elsewhere. But, you know, like I mentioned, that squad, we'd played together since we were like 14, 15, throughout all the age groups. We knew each other inside out. And I think, yeah, starting off at Liverpool, we got off to a win. And, in, you know, it sounds daft, but, you know, in sport, it is momentum. You know, it was, we just knew how to play on those pitches. You know, the batters really stood up, put scores on the board. And then, you know, our bowling attack was very strong in the seam department, the spinners as well we had. And, you know, everyone, as I mentioned, you know, earlier, everyone enjoyed each other's success. And, you know, it's very rare you play in those teams. You know, if one lad got a duck one day, everyone was gutted for him. But then, you know, if he got 100 the next game, everyone was absolutely buzzing for him. And, you know, the same on the bowling side. It was, you know, if it wasn't my day, if it wasn't Chappie's day, it was Tom Smith's or Saj Mahmood, you know, whoever else. You know, we just wanted to win games. You know, we weren't bothered who did it. We just wanted to beat teams. And we sort of established our own identity of playing at Liverpool. We knew what to do and we knew how to play at the outgrounds. And, you know, and when you do start winning games, it was funny, like, just things just went for us all the time. You know, it's, you know, unbelievable catches, run outs, you know, winning. There's a couple of games we won with, I think, 5 minutes to go in the game, and all them things went for us. But, you know, the year after we got relegated, and I genuinely don't think we played much different, but them things that went for us the year before, they went the opposite. And then, you know, where you those games we were winning, we were losing them. And obviously the momentum went sort of the opposite way. But yeah, no, it was just, it was good. And it, I think looking back, it was good to enjoy it with your friends who you still speak to.
Exactly. It's funny you mention that because we had Stephen Croft here on the Counter Cricket podcast. Great, great bloke. I must admit, Crofty is an absolute legend. Had some great him, stories.
Me and him lived together for 8 years.
What was he like?
Yeah, he's a good lad, isn't he? Good lad.
There's some hesitation there, Hoggy. But no, in terms of that season, he mentioned about that real, almost kinship between you guys. It was a really, really tight unit. You'd been playing cricket together for years, and it was an incredible team dynamic. And I have to talk about that final game of the season, because 2011, a lot like a few championship seasons which have, I suppose, come and gone since, came right down to the wire. And in fact, it was my county of Warwickshire. Unfortunately, we couldn't beat Hampshire. But up until that final round, we were right in the mix, as were Durham. Durham actually beat Warwickshire and Lancs, I think, twice that season. They were unbeaten against the top two counties. They were also in the mix as well, heading into that final round. But Lancs versus Somerset, Kyle, what can you remember from that fateful game?
Well, there's always been some big needle between us and Somerset. You know, we didn't really get on. You know, there was always something happened when we played each other. So taking out, potentially winning the championship, whatever, we just wanted to beat them. You know, like, we really did want to beat them. And we turned up to Somerset. They knew we had a chance of winning the league. They prepared the flattest Taunton wicket you've ever seen. You know, like, pretty obvious that they're just anyone to win it but us. And the same thing, you know, it was sort of going at each other for a couple of days. And then I think going into the third day, we were pretty much out of it. You know, we were, the way other games were going, I don't think we were really thinking about winning the league. It was more a case of, like, can we win this game? You know, like, I think Somerset got quite a big lead. Trago, as he always seemed to do, got 100 against us. I think maybe Hildreth, he always gets runs against everyone, but he seemed to always do well against us. And then from, like, out of nowhere, we managed to bowl them out, and they set us a pretty, you know, obviously on the last day we're watching how the other games are going. We keep seeing Carberry's still batting, he's still batting, and then, you know, you start thinking, can it be done? Can it be done? And then, but like, as I said, everything that had to go our way did go our way. You know, it was, if it had been a few overs here and there, we wouldn't have had enough time to knock them off. And I suppose it was just probably written in the stars that we were going to win the game and the championship before that game started, because for the first 3 days, we were nowhere near winning it. And then I think we knocked off something in the last session. We needed about 100, maybe 150 or something. I don't know. It was just, you look back on it now and you don't seem like it really happened. You know, you look at pictures and all the celebrations, it's like, just seems another world away. You know, Croft is still playing, so he's probably like, he'll probably get this feeling in 3 or 4 years' time, you know, when he finishes playing. But it's, you know, to finally get a championship medal is what it's about. You know, all the players that we named at the start of this, they never won the championship. And that's one thing that, you know, we'll always have, you know, that group of players, we'll always have that championship medal, no matter what we're doing in the future.
It's funny you mention that. I said that to Craig Miles, a winner with Warwickshire in 2021. I suppose the moment of realisation only comes afterwards, when you realise what that group has actually achieved. Because if you think in Lancashire's history, they have won 8 outright championship trophies and one shared one, which they shared with Surrey in 1950. It's staggering that you were part of one of those 8 teams. It's incredible. And when you think about the drought as well, I know that they did share that one with Surrey in 1950, but in terms of an outright championship win, the last time before then was 1934, which for a club of Lancs's size and pedigree is a staggering drought, to say the least. So, yeah. Kyle, I have to ask, was that the proudest or the greatest moment of your playing career at Lancashire?
Yeah, by a mile. And you don't just win the championship from playing well for 4 days on the, you know, the last game of the season. That is a lot of, you know, what people don't realise is a lot of hard work going into a championship season to play six, we play 16 games, can't even remember. However many games you play is a lot. Take into account, you know, all the travelling, the hotels, your days off are probably travelling to another 1 day game. So, you know, it's well earned. You know, you don't just win it by having a good team of names on a piece of paper. You know, that we've had that in the past at Lancashire where you've just thought no one's ever going to beat us and we never won anything. Because I think sometimes you get in that mindset of, oh, well, you know, if I don't do it today, someone else will do it. Someone else will win the game. And before you know it, nobody does. Whereas that group of lads we had, everybody wanted to be the main man every game. So it just meant that if it wasn't your day, it was somebody else's. And yeah, it was just a really special group of players. And coach, you know, Peter Moores, you've got to, you know, he's turned everyone's careers around, really. Where, you know, a lot of us were probably just coasting along of playing county cricket. You know, you win some, you lose some. Obviously, you want to do well and stuff. But I think Moores came in with a completely new attitude, new work ethic that, you know, we'd not really seen before, probably of international standard. And, you know, he expected the best from everyone and he got the best out of everyone.
I'm so happy you mentioned Peter Moore's name because I wanted to know, in particular, what his impact on your game was like. Because you've just alluded to it there, actually, and I'm very interested that you did. Almost that feeling of coasting, almost that feeling of, yeah, we're achieving that level, but we're not going beyond it. We're almost comfortable. We're in that little bubble. How integral was Peter Moores to furthering your career, Kyle? How much of a catalyst was he in terms of improving your personal game?
Oh, yeah, 100%. You know, like, he just believed in the players and he believed in each one. You know, he knew how to get the best out of everyone. Someone, you know, I needed a kick up the arse every now and then, needed a bollocking, which he did. You know, like I said, you know, he get stuck in space. He knew the ones who needed an arm around them. You know, he knew. He was just a good people person and he was just a good bloke. You know, I think he'll quite openly talk about, you know, his career was probably not where he'd have wanted it to get to. But I think, you know, he retired early going into coaching, knowing like what's required and how you get to that next level. And, you know, he took that into his coaching and he definitely brought it into us. You know, even when we used to do the fitness tests and all the running, he'd be, if not fitter than most of the staff. You know, he'd be on the rowing machine at 7 a.m, absolutely blasting it. And then you start questioning yourself, like, well, if he's a, whatever he was at the time, probably mid-40s, maybe 40, I don't know. If he's doing it, why am I not doing it? And he probably just brought an international culture into county cricket. And, you know, I still speak to him every now and then, you know, today. You know, he's just the same person. And that's, I think, what you want from your coach. You know, none of it was ever about him. You know, like when we won the league, he was never, I did this, I did that. It was always the players. And I think even now, if I said to him, you know, are you free on Saturday morning? I want to work on something. He'd probably make time to come and help you with your game. And that's all, you know, you can ever ask from your coaching. And I think that's hopefully one thing, you know, I want to do with my coaching is it's not all about level 4 master coach, all this stuff. It's about, you know, the player individually and how you make them better. That's the bottom line.
It certainly is. And we'll touch upon that in more detail at a later point in the podcast, because I'm interested to know actually about your venture into the world of coaching and in terms of your particular coaching style, because we always like to talk about that here on the podcast. We've had the likes of David Ripley on, Jim Charlton, John Sadler, to name but a few. It's a really, really interesting part of cricket. So we'll pick that conversation up in due course. But just before we talk about coaching, I just want to talk about the tougher days, if that's all right, Carl, because unfortunately, in the game of cricket, you do have these incredible days. 2011, for example, winning the championship, you feel like you're on top of the world, county champions of England and Wales, and you feel like everything's going your way. But in the game of cricket, that isn't how this sport goes. You know, there's peaks and troughs. You have these great moments. You have these really, really low moments as well. In your county playing days for Lancs, what would you say was your toughest moment from a personal perspective?
Probably had loads, to be honest. You know, it's hard to pick one out specifically, but, you know, the amount of cricket you play, it's just, it's natural that you're not going to be on top of your game every game. You know, and cricket is one of those games where you can do all the right preparation, you can hit a million balls, you can bowl whatever, but, you know, if sometimes it's not in your hands how well you do, you might go out, get a bad decision, you miss a straight ball, you know, there's so many things. And, you know, I probably spent too long in my career, you know, worrying about them type of things. Whereas, you know, as you get older and you get more sort of used to what's required, you probably iron them out a bit. But I think, you know, the low points were just days where, because you have such big expectations and, you know, when it doesn't go how you want it to and you're trying everything and you're doing all the right things and it's still not working, them are the days that I suppose really test you and make you what you are as a person and a cricketer.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because again, this points to the psychological aspect of the game. How did you overcome those dark days? And I suppose, what was the real drive? What was the inner motivation to keep going in county cricket, even when you did have those low points?
Well, it's your job, isn't it? At the end of the day, that's a reality of professional sport. It's you're getting paid every month, you're on a contract. So you either, if you quit or you've had enough, you know, the nice house you've got, your good car, going out for, you know, doing what you want when you want, that all sort of goes, doesn't it, straight away. So not saying cricketers get paid like footballers, but even the county cricketers, you get used to a decent lifestyle. And, you know, that is your drive. I mean, it might not necessarily be financial, but your drive is to, you know, you're going to have to, if you don't do it, what are you going to do? And, you know, for a lot of us who play cricket, and, you know, I've got friends in other sports, they've been professionals since they left school. So you've got no other qualifications. You've not done the university degrees that your friends have gone on to do because you've been playing your cricket. And I suppose that is your drive, isn't it? You want to play as long as you can to set yourself up for whatever comes after cricket.
Exactly. And that's a really important thing to touch upon, because that's something which the PCA, the Professional Cricketers Association, are really starting to hammer home now, is the fact that there is a life after cricket. You need other skills, you need other qualifications, and they do all sorts, don't they, in terms of workshops, courses, you know, all this, that, the other.
They do, but all of it is like, it's up to the individual to get, you know, get in touch with them, right, I want to do this, I want to do that, I want to try this. But, you know, personally, I left school, signed for Lancashire, I don't know what I ever want to do. You know, it's like, I think we could be a lot better at, you know, making people do things. You know, in the winter we get, you know, me and Crofty, we used to have 2 months off end of every season. You know, we'd just sit in a flat in the centre of town. You know, you'd be going out, you'd be playing on the PlayStation or whatever. You know, like, looking back, if it had been right, if you're not going away to play cricket this winter, you have to do a week's work experience somewhere. You have to enroll onto a course, and then it just makes you build them things up over the years you play. It just means that when you finish, you miss that gap of, right, what am I going to do, and how am I going to go from having a good job to, you know, if you've got nothing and you've got to start at the bottom again, it's like that's even harder as well. You know, whatever career you do next, if you've not got a degree for it or a qualification, you're going to be starting at the bottom of the pile on very, very small wages, which is even, you know, that is hard as well. So I think, you know, I think they do a lot of good things, but I think it could be better on being a bit more proactive and making people do stuff.
No, that's a fair comment. And again, it's very, very sound advice for any young cricketers out there. You do have to think about the life beyond the game, because as much as it is a fantastic career, it really is an honour and a privilege to be a professional cricketer, getting paid to play the sport that you love. Like any sport, it's cutthroat. Literally, your career can end at any moment. You could have a life-changing injury and that's your career gone. And all of a sudden, if you've got no backup plan, what do? You're out in the sticks a little bit. You've got no options and you're back at square one. It's a harsh reality of the game. And I wanted to actually touch upon that, Kyle, because unfortunately with your career, it was cut short by injury, which is a massive, massive shame. And before we talk about the transition out of the game itself, when did those injury issues start flaring up in the first place? When did you start to notice them first taking shape?
I finished at 31, which people say, oh, you know, young to finish. But, you know, I started at 17. So it's like, you know, I still had a very good, you know, long career. Probably like a couple of seasons before, you know, it was just getting a bit, I suppose, stiff and sore. And, you know, bowling at Old Trafford is, bowling in general is hard, but, you know, bowling at Old Trafford is pretty hard as well. And then, you know, I was having injections in my back, you know, to get through seasons and stuff and things like that, which were going well. And then the year I actually finished, I had 6 cortisone injections, I think four in my back and 2 in top of my bum, which didn't even touch the sides, you know, like didn't even do anything, which was, I think, you know, a bit of a concern. And everyone always says, you know, your own body. And obviously went for a scan and it was where the disc, where I've been having the injections, the disc had basically worn away completely. But because of the cortisone, you can't feel it. So the bone actually fused together at the bottom. So it was like bone on bone. But it was never sore. You know, it was just like got to a point where it just felt like someone had poured cement down my neck and I just couldn't, like, you know, I just couldn't move that well. So obviously, yeah, you go off your scan and it was like, yeah, you're done. But, you know, I was fine with it. You know, it's like I always saw myself as I was lucky to play cricket for so long. You know, a lot of my friends who they might have had 1 season, 2 seasons, they never got to experience, you know, the full, I suppose, being a Lancashire player and getting capped and, you know, going on to the next level. So, you know, could have been a lot worse, I guess.
Well, to be honest, Carl, I respect that. I really do, because when you look at the county circuit, and this is something which people, I don't think, quite appreciate at times, the average career really isn't that long. When you think of the amount of short-term contracts, we're talking 6-month or 1-year contracts, the average county career lasts between 2 and 3 years, which is nothing. Compare that to, I suppose, a quote-unquote 9-to-5 job, which can last for 20-plus years or even longer in some cases. It's really not a long amount of time at all. And in fact, I'm glad that you've had that approach, because I imagine it would have been tough at the time. You know, when you first received that news, that would have been incredibly difficult to process, because as you mentioned, going straight from school to Lancs, your life up until that point had been professional cricket. You'd experienced the highs, the lows, you'd experienced the glory of 2011. And yeah, just 2 seasons afterwards, it was all over. But with that being said, in that initial phase afterwards, when you had retired and you were forced to leave the game, how did you cope? How did you actually manage that transition out of the professional game? Did you do anything, put any steps in place in order to make that process easier?
Yeah, so the 3 seasons before I actually finished, I worked in the winter with a friend on the music, on the gigs. So he looks after loads of gigs, loads of artists. So I've always been into music.
Who's your favourite musician?
That's a tough one. But I'm into like bands, you know, guitar bands, stuff. So, you know, it's hard to name one. But, you know, I like all the Manchester stuff, the Smiths, Stone Roses.
Oasis.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so I've been lucky enough to work with Liam and Noel on gigs since finishing. But so I worked for 3 years with him in the winter. And that was, you know, starting at 6 a.m, finishing at 1 a.m, you know, doing some long days on tour, but getting to see, I suppose, what the other world is, even though it's the music world, which is probably, it's a lot different to an office job, but it is, you know, it's pretty relentless. It's full on, you know, it's you're doing 18, 20 hour days. So I did that for 3 winters with my friend. He was in the Inspiral Carpets. I don't know if you remember them. Big band in the 90s, massive Lancashire fan. So I used to always leave him tickets for cricket. He'd get me on guest list for gigs. And then obviously we were lucky enough at Lancashire to have 12 month contracts. So it just meant that I didn't need to get paid going with him. You know, I could sort of have a look at working and see what it's like without having to be paid from him. So we finished the season and then started the Stereophonics tour. The first one was at Manchester Arena. So did about five or six of the tour with him, just, you know, traveling and doing the shows. So when I finished, actually got the news of, you know, you finished playing cricket, it was fine because, you know, I'd set myself up for when I finished. And I think about a month or two after, you know, I'd actually physically retired from playing for Lancashire, I was, you know, working with the bands and the music. But that was because of the hard work I'd done for free, basically, for the three off seasons leading up to it. So then I went from, you know, being in a dressing room day in, day out to, you know, sort of being in, not a dressing room environment, but you're still in a high pressure environment, a lot of egos, a lot of, you know, drink, drugs. It's a sort of different, you know, you're trying to manage loads of different things that you probably don't necessarily get in sport, but, you know, the stuff that you've picked up in sport and being in and around dressing rooms, you know, that definitely gets you in good stead for any job you go into when you finish.
It most certainly does. And again, it comes back to that point that we made beforehand, having those steps in place, always having that backup plan to fall back on. And honestly, Carl, I'm very glad that you did. And it sounds like it was a pretty cool job, I must admit. What's the story with the Gallaghers, if you don't mind asking?
Well, I mean, not necessarily any story. It's just we're SJM Concerts. So they, they're the biggest, you know, they promote pretty much every gig and band, and anything you probably see is a good chance it'll be SJM Concerts on the ticket. So what happens is you get assigned tours. So they'll say, right, can you do the whoever it may be, Billie Eilish, Blossoms, Cortinas, and then, you know, once you agree to that, you go on the road with them, and basically you're the middleman between everything. You got to make the gig run, so you're in between the lights, the sound, the management, the venue, the agent, the band themselves, the assistants. So you're like the glue in between everyone, and just, I suppose, you're the captain of the team. You just got to make it work. So it was really good, and you know, a lot of the ones that I looked after, you know, I've been with them since sort of the first ever gigs when we were playing to like 30 or 40 people in a room, and then, you know, you're a year down the line and you're playing arenas that are sold out with the same people, and so you sort of go on the journey with them, and probably similar to, you know, you're playing the second team and then all of a sudden you're playing the first team and then all of a sudden you're playing for England. You know, it was really good, but obviously COVID put a quick stop to that. So I did that for nearly eight years since finishing. And then COVID finished. We were in Southampton with Blossoms, who were the band I've sort of been with since the beginning. And then they were like, oh yeah, COVID, the gigs are going to finish. And we were like, what? And then obviously it did. And then 2 years down the line, you find yourself, I suppose, back in the same situation as when you retire. You know, you're back to the drawing board. And that's how I sort of got back into the coaching, because, you know, I had some free time, and the girls and the women's stuff at Lancashire I think they were looking for some help with the bowlers. And, you know, I went in and absolutely, absolutely loved it, to be honest. Just a completely different setup to what, you know, I've been used to throughout my career. You know, I've never worked in female sport myself, but you go in with the same attitude, I think, as you had of when you were a player. And, you know, I've really enjoyed it. And, you know, I've been doing it for the last couple of years, on and off.
Well, that is fantastic to hear. It really is, Carl. I'm glad that you're enjoying the role, because it's quite a good role as well. And as we know in this country, the women's game is this real growing force. I mean, it's going from strength to strength, year in, year out. And honestly, for those who don't watch it, give it a try. Honestly, the standard of the women's game in this country is going better and better year in, year out. In fact, the women's team actually are playing tonight on the eve of this recording. We're in the test match now of the women's Ashes, currently 4-2 down, unfortunately, due to the weather in Adelaide, which isn't ideal. But we'll have to wait and see. Hopefully, fingers crossed, they can get a result at the Manor Oval. And who knows, maybe turn the series around. I mean, it's going to be tough. Australia in women's ODI cricket as well have got a pretty staggering record. I think they've only lost once in the past 3 years or so. So we'll have to wait and see if they can turn it around, but obviously wishing the women's team the very best of luck. And Kyle, in terms of your experiences with the girls and women's cricket at Lancs so far, how would you describe your experiences? You know, what have been the best things of the job so far?
The best bit about it is, you know, they're always wanting to learn and get better. You know, I think they're probably 5 or 10 years behind of where we would be as boys growing up playing cricket. You know, we probably grew up playing from when we were 5 or 6 years old. You know, you'd be always bowling, always batting, whereas I think taking out the girls who have maybe got dads or brothers or, you know, they've been in and around cricket clubs all their lives, you know, a lot of the girls probably come into it a bit later, probably 12, 13. So even though they're really good cricketers, they're probably still learning the game as well as they're going along. So I think, you know, it's just really exciting. You can see how quickly they make progress. They all really want to do well. And luckily, you know, at Lancashire, you know, having the two England, you know, you've got your Kate Cross and Sophie Eccleston around. I think the girls see that that's not a million miles away, because, you know, the nature of the girls and the women's pathway is if you perform well for your county, you're not a million miles off from playing for England straight away. So, you know, it's just, yeah, it's exciting, and it is good being in a different environment. You know, they all want to get better. Everybody listens. There's no, you know, well, from what I've seen, there's definitely no egos at all. You know, it's a good environment.
That is wonderful to hear. It really is, Kyle. And again, it's just the enjoyment and the excitement of the game. And it is a fantastic game. Obviously, I'm very biased as the host of the Counts Cricket podcast, but in my view, cricket, greatest sport ever invented. And yeah, we'll continue to be the greatest sport on the planet for many, many years to come. I have no doubt. And that's actually quite an interesting point when you think about it with that Lancs female academy system. You have got Sophie and Kate in that England setup. You've also got Alex Hartley on the comms, who was a World Cup winner as well in 2017. Yeah. Emma Lamb in the England A team as well at the moment. I mean, producing some excellent players.
Ellie Threlkeld, she's the keeper out. She's in Oz as well at the moment. So it just shows you, obviously, Ellie and Lammy did really well last summer. And all of a sudden, they're one team away from, you know, playing for England now. So it's... the opportunity is there for, you know, for the women. You know, they get paid well. Some, you know, there's franchise stuff around the world. You know, the game is going in the right direction. You know, they're pumping money into it. It's on TV. The 100 especially is going to have a massive impact again this summer. So it's, yeah, I think it's just about getting it out there and growing it and getting more girls. You know, I've got two little girls myself, and it's about getting girls playing cricket. You know, that's the best bit about it.
Most certainly is. And Carl, are your two daughters into cricket? Are they interested by the sport or not quite? No.
not yet. I mean, like 6 and 3. So I would never be that parent who's like, you have to go to cricket, because that's what I did. You know, it's if they want to go, and, you know, I'll take them along. If not, you know, there's no pressure there. But it'd be nice for them to just keep active. You know, for me, it doesn't have to be about cricket. It's just about, you know, it'd be good for them to get the same enjoyment of playing in teams and, you know, that sort of winning and losing and, you know, the ups and downs. You know, that's, I think they're good life lessons that you can take into anything when you kick on.
Absolutely. And again, that's why I like the game, because there are those life lessons. It teaches you these skills which last for life. And again, it does. It brings so much great enjoyment, so much excitement. It's just a great sport. And again, I'm not going to keep on waxing lyrical about cricket. I imagine you can already tell I'm an absolute badger. But yeah, it really is a very, very special sport indeed. And Carl, before we wrap up today's episode, which has been absolutely fascinating, might I just add, I've thoroughly enjoyed it. I've just had a look. We've been going on for over an hour. I didn't realise that. But in terms of the future, both immediate and maybe long-term as well, what does the future hold for Kyle Hogg? What do you want to achieve in the remainder of 2022?
Just to keep being involved in cricket. You know, I think keep not necessarily being involved in any teams or any professional setups. I think getting, you know, hopefully passing on knowledge for people to get better as not only cricketers, but hopefully if it helps with personal life as well, you know, that's, I think that's the main thing, isn't it? You know, it's, you know, teams will always come and go, but, you know, being a good person is first and foremost. And I think that's what people remember, you know, when, you know, when we're a long way down the line, never, you know, they don't necessarily remember stats, but they'll remember, you know, was that person a nice person? That's the main thing.
It most certainly is. Although, to be fair, I will say some people remember the stats. The cricket connoisseur.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you've got nothing else in your life other than cricket, you remember the stats, trust me. When it's all you do for 24 hours a day. But honestly, Carl, just wishing you nothing but the very best of luck, mate, to be honest. Both with the female academy system at Lanx and, of course, in your personal life as well. I mean, I've thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed tonight's chat. It's been absolutely fantastic. I imagine the Lanx fans as well tuning in, they'll have had a nice grin on their face listening to all those stories from 2011 and that incredible team of the late 90s, early 2000s. Yeah, really, really has been a very, very enjoyable and engrossing podcast. And Carl, before we say our final goodbyes, do you just have anything to plug or promote? Any social media channels, websites, anything like that?
I'm actually, I don't know. No, I mean, it's, no, I'm all good. no.
Not even Twitter?
Well, I mean, I'm on Twitter and Instagram and stuff, if people are into that. But, yeah, it's just Kyle Hogg, 22. That's it. Nothing too exciting on that.
Well, there you have it, folks. We'll leave the links to those in the podcast description below. Instagram and Twitter. If you want to go and follow Hoggy, please feel free to do so at your own discretion. But that is pretty much it from us two here tonight at the County Cricket Podcast for tonight's episodes. To all of you wonderful listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.